2 Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, we're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Big thanks to Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal for joining us in the crossover in the first segment. And as a reminder, we'll have Sarah Sivian from Bleacher Report on at 1 o'clock as well, as we just try to get Drantz back connected here momentarily. And we'll see if he's ready to dive into his notebook, if it has in fact been updated up at the Athletic. Now, while we wait for that, another piece of The Athletic that just recently dropped, and in fact, we'll get into that in a second. It's from Michael Russo, and it concerns Marco Rossi. But we do have Drantz back and on the line. And Drantzer, what's your call? Are you going to scoop yourself? Are we ready to go here? Should we tap dance a little bit? Where are we going with this?
Yeah, no, I'll obviously just open the notebook.
There we go.
I was just kidding. No, but I'll do it, but everyone promised to go check it out at The Athletic.
That's afterwards. Yes, that is the solemn vow that you take by listening to this segment. I mean, there's no way for us to confirm. This is the honor system, but we take this seriously, okay? This is the covenant.
In good faith.
Yeah.
In good faith, go read the thing when it goes up in a bit. Okay, so, I mean, I've already got into some of it.
Sure.
You know, the Coles notes of what we're going to be running shortly is: this marketplace is extraordinarily competitive, and there's no signs of that abating. Like, the end of the flat cap era and the incoming cap growth era is going to make, you know, the annual silly season even more topsy-turvy, a little more upside down than usual. NHL teams are desperate to not rebuild. There's like 30 different motivated buyers. And in this milieu, the Canucks emerge with like some cap flexibility, but not nearly as much cap flexibility as about 20 other NHL teams, right? Mm-hmm. The Canucks have some good prospects, like some actual good prospects, but not nearly as many or as much volume as about 20 other NHL teams, right? They're willing to trade their first-round draft pick, the 15th overall pick, but so is basically everyone in the middle part of the first round.
Well, that's higher. Like Utah, number 4, right? It goes a lot higher than the middle part.
Well, and higher or with more volume. Like the Montreal Canadiens sit one pick behind them and one pick behind that, 16 and 17. And they're a motivated buyer with much of the same needs, second line center. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the headline thing that I can report to you is that Vancouver's, you know, sense of optimism, right? Their view that, you know, they're going to be able to accomplish a top two line center or two or three impact forwards, right? Which was kind of the stated shopping list at the end of the season. Like, I think the club is increasingly pessimistic about their ability to accomplish as much as they'd like on July 2nd. That's the sense I get, just given how competitive this is. Now, they're making contingency plans. I think there's a comfort level with sort of believing in this group and believing in the bounce back of this group, right? This was like the 7th most injured team last season when you adjust for sort of the cap cost of their absences. You had 6 weeks of absence from Peronic. You had Quinn Hughes dinged up by about game 50. Wasn't really the same guy thereafter. Mm-hmm. You had, you know, Pettersson out of form for bizarre reasons early in the season and then injury reasons after about Christmas. Remember, he had that big game against San Jose right before Christmas and took a knock. And then obviously missed the end part of the season with injury. You had Thatcher Demko with 3 separate injury-related absences, never found his rhythm. You know, if this club is like, look, that wasn't representative of who we are and we were still a 90-point team, I think that's credible. Like, I don't even disagree with that, right? Now, they lost JT Miller.
That's a big problem with that equation.
So there's a lot. They also lost Rick Tocchet, right? So it's still a different group. But, you know, I think this organization can tell itself a story about being a playoff team, you know, without necessarily breaking the bank or just finding some good fits as opposed to star players. But they're not a contender, right? You're a team mm-hmm. that can make the playoffs. You're not a team that can credibly dream about a conference final berth. You know, not in a Western Conference where there's only been four teams that have even competed at that level across the last 6 years, right? And three of those teams, like only one of those teams, Colorado only did it once. Colorado's only been to the conference final once in 6 years. All the rest of the time, it's Dallas, it's Edmonton, it's Vegas, and like it's Montreal. And it's like, what are you doing here, Montreal? and they just say it was the pandemic. What do you mean? It gets a little bit more into the Duchesne thing, the idea that the Canucks would have actually beat that offer for that he signed in Dallas. That it's a pretty big blow, a pretty big out. In terms of adding a top of the lineup forward who's center capable and actually a top of the lineup option is off the market, there's no replacements for him. Like Tavares doesn't have the speed, right? He probably is a winger at this stage of his career, especially once you get into the playoffs and into those games that have more pace. I think we saw that against Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Claude Giroux is not the same caliber of guy. Although, you know, my Giroux skepticism, I think, has been well established on this. On this program, dating back to his acquisition by my Florida Panthers. I got into the Hedl thing, the idea that Canucks are prepared for Hedl to be their second line center if it comes to that. And then I got into some sort of odds and ends. So the key surplus that I'm looking at obviously is on the back end.
Yep.
Right. And I do think this club is, you know, if they don't land the types of impact guys they want to, again, it's not going to be for a lack of trying. Alvin's working the phones like a wild man here, trying to turn over every rock and see what snakes crawl out and what advantages or what edges that they can find to take advantage of. And, you know, Elias Pettersson, the defender, Junior Petey, as he's called internally, remains untouchable. I believe that Tom Volander is in the same boat, okay. Although he probably belongs in a different category somewhat, just given that he hasn't established himself at the NHL level and obviously had tense negotiations on his entry-level deal. And yet, you know, there's an internal recognition that if the club's going to land the sorts of players they want to land, it's going to require some pain. There's going to be some moves that they absolutely hate having to make, that they'll have to make if they're going to land the sort of center upgrade or forward upgrades that they're desperate for, right? Emergency level desperate for. And I think that sort of dovetails nicely with a conversation about Victor Mancini. Sawyer Mineo, too, a guy that the organization absolutely loves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're outright excited about both players and would prefer to find less painful answers to their forward needs. But internally, like, obviously, you're going to have some level of pain tolerance.
Yes. You can't have, like, your top five defensive prospects all be untouchable. You know what I mean? That's just saying you're not willing to trade guys. Then guess what? You're not going to acquire anyone.
Yeah. If that's the world you're in, then you're saying stuff like our identity is going to be on the back end mm-hmm. and we're going to build this way and this is how we're going to try and win. And good luck with that. Right. It's antithetical to how Jim Rutherford has won throughout his career, frankly. Right. That's not how Jim Rutherford has ever done things. And he has three Stanley Cups. So it would be hard to imagine that he would have suddenly decided that a blue line surplus strength on the back end is what he needs to win now. Like that, you know, I don't buy that. I think they spent a lot of time and effort and treasure and term and draft assets to rebuild and reconstruct this blue line. And just at the moment where they got it more or less where they wanted it to be, you know, a hole in their forward quality got blown into them by whatever happened between Pettersson and JT Miller, right? And Pettersson's baffling fall off. I didn't write this in the notebook too, but like, they're really confident in a Pettersson bounce back.
All right.
Especially given the context that they have around last season. Now, I don't think that they necessarily expect it to be like, oh, he's going to flip a switch and be the first half of the 2023-24 Pettersson
mm-hmm.
right off the hop. Like, this might take some time. It might take a year, but he's healthy and there's a lot of optimism about sort of where he's trending. I also still expect the Canucks to find a way to get an extension done with Thatcher Demko here. Despite the commitment the club made to Kevin Lankinen, the club's strong preference is to have a really like overloaded goalie tandem. And it's going to be expensive, right? Like, there's no question about that, despite the sort of shared risk angle that we've been talking about for a few months here. But I don't get the sense that the club is risk averse on having a lot of their cap resources tied up in net, given anticipated salary cap growth over the next few years. I talked a little bit about the idea of the Canucks being willing to swing the bat on younger forwards with risky profiles. And lastly, a guy who I'm hearing some really significant positivity about internally, probably doesn't factor into their NHL plans. Neither of these guys do for next season. At least not how they're drawing it up on the whiteboard, although things can change with a player having a strong summer and forcing their hand or whatever injuries come during the season next year. But I think two guys that are a little bit under the radar that have really turned heads over the course of this American League run, Ty Mueller.
Okay.
And Kudryavtsev, of course.
Sure. Like,
there's a growing internal confidence in Kudryavtsev being a guy with the ability to carve out an NHL niche down the line. And I wonder how much, too, that'll inform, you know, because he's not going to have trade value, just given his size. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I wonder how much that'll sort of inform, you know, the idea of Mancini or Minio package, right?
Like, yep.
Yeah, take one of those guys, add it to the first. That becomes pretty similar to, for example, the package that the Minnesota Wild accepted when they traded Kevin Fiala to the Los Angeles Kings, right? It becomes at least similar in form. There's no Brock Faber in the deal, obviously, but Brock Faber wasn't exactly Brock Faber, and there was other mitigating circumstances there, given the unlikelihood that he was ever going to sign in LA coming out of college. So, you know, that becomes the sort of trade that we've seen land an impact player in the past. Whether it will this season, given, you know, a saturated market of available mid-round picks, we'll see. But those are sort of some of the trade chips that I'm like beginning to key in on.
Yeah.
As real possibilities for the next 12 days.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot there, and some of it we can kind of put a pin in and dive into in our final segment at 1:30. But just kind of big picture in the final few minutes of this segment, the idea of, look, the impact second line center and the other impact forward, that's probably not going to happen. So we're going to have to go back to the drawing board and figure out what does it look like with Pettersson, Hedl, and some combination of Ratu, Bluger, and who knows, down the middle. How do we get the most out of that version of the team? I mean, obviously part of it, I think that speaks to the willingness and the desire to figure out a Demko extension, right? Like, if you're not able to bring in the offensive firepower, you really want to solidify your goaltending situation. They've already done a lot of work solidifying their blue line. So philosophically, you can kind of see it playing out. Hey, we're just going to lean. We're going to try to recapture our defensive identity from a year ago now and really lean into that. I am curious what it means in practice from a player acquisition, who they're targeting, who they do get to fill out the roster point of view. Because whether you, like, maybe you can't move the 15th pick plus for a young impact second line center, but you're still going to bring in guys, right? Like, they might not fit the profile that we've been talking about, but you still need to go out and acquire extra forwards. And I'm kind of wondering, I'm curious what the domino effect of maybe at least not already committing to like plan B, but at least starting to, they're starting to figure out what plan B looks like, it sounds like, is what you're saying, right? And I'm curious, like, what the actual practical steps, what types of guys they're targeting, how does that kind of reconfigure what they see as their needs, all of that, what that actually means in practice come July 1st.
Yeah, and you know, that's stuff that I start to get and hear more about, Jamie, to be totally honest with you, like, around the draft.
Sure.
Now, I'm not going to the draft this year, right? Like, I won't be live, so I'm not going to have as many opportunities to, like, bump into the right person over beers, which may diminish my effectiveness at getting it. Not that I regularly break names, but sometimes we're at least discussing the right guys or tilting in the right direction. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's some names we've been talking about for months that I still would expect to sort of fit the bill, even if the Canucks have to lower their sights here. Jack Roslovic,
sure,
right,
yes,
being sort of chief among them,
yep,
right. Could that
Pavel
could
Zacha
that sort of
Pavel Zacha, if he's available, right? Like, if there's,
although I'm becoming, the fact that the Bruins don't seem to be like truly leaning into
right
You know, like that might have been like a one-time opportunity that they seized at the deadline, really liquidating a bunch of vets for sort of a one-time tank job. You know, that report of them like pursuing Noah Dobson, with the pick. You know, that to me is like a pretty good indicator that they're not keen to spend much time at the bottom of the standings. That's not the plan here. And so if that's the case, then Zach is good value and he's a big center and hard to come by that type of player. And so that becomes less of a realistic option in my mind. But the Roslovic thing is always going to be something that I'm watching closely here. You know, that it's going to be tough. I mean, make no mistake, this is going to be a really complicated set of sort of off-season priorities for the Canucks here. There just isn't that much available, man.
Yeah.
There just isn't that much available at all. You know, guys like Brandon Tanev, Jack Roslovic are guys that this organization have been tied to in the past. Kasperi Kapanen.
Sure.
Is a guy whose name is going to be...
Should never be too far off our radar,
should
really.
Should never be too far off our radar when Jim Rutherford's involved, right? The Penguins drafted him. They drafted him when Patrick Alvin was responsible for European scouting, right? And then they traded him for Phil Kessel, but then reacquired him for a first-round pick, right?
Yep.
So the Kapanen one looms large in my imagination as well. So, a selection of guys like that, fill out the depth, try to have four balanced lines, try to win with defense and quality goaltending. And really, you know what this all is, Jamie, to be totally honest, if we were to summarize it?
Mm-hmm.
It's the last stand for this core.
Right.
That's really the framing. It's like, we've got Demko, we've got Pettersson, we've got Hughes. I wouldn't say they've been like disappointing because they've all hit exceptional levels individually. And obviously Quinn Hughes has hit a transcendent level individually. But in terms of being a group that has led this franchise to like better days, I think it's fair to say that this like formerly elite young core has had a disappointing or underachieving tenure as the respective faces of the Canucks organization. Is that fair?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Of course it is.
Right? Like it has to be.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think they should say it.
Like, right.
They should say it when they show up at, because who cares what you've done individually? Who cares how much money you've made or who you like this organization, this team hasn't succeeded with you guys being its most important players. And that's not on you necessarily by any means, but it's true. That's the truth of the matter. The Florida Panthers, like though that the players that carry themselves that way, they would see it that way, right? You have to see it that way, I think, if you're competitive enough to be the core group that powers a great team. And so, you know, my framing would be this is the last stand. Like, especially if Demko gets an extension and they go past July 1 and Pettersson's no move clause kicks in, both of which I expect to occur, or at least expect the club to push to do, right? That's where their preference is. If both of those things happen and on July 2nd, the Canucks do XYZ, you know, it's fair to say, like, did they do enough to support those guys? That'll be a totally fair conversation for us to have. But I think the real framing is this organization is going to give this underachieving core group one last stand.
All right. We will talk more about what's next for the Canucks in the final segment. Sarah Sivian joins us next. School's out. Summer's here. Kick it off with the BC Lions summer camp game Saturday, June 21st at 4 p.m. For details and tickets, visit bclions.com. Sarah Sivian from Bleacher Report will chat NHL offseason with her next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strantz. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec Studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's never too early to get your Vancouver Giants season's tickets. Tickets start at under $19 at vancouvergiants.com/season tickets. Guests on Sportsnet 650 call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca. NBA Today. They keep the lights on. And now joining us on the hotline powered by Power West Industries from Bleacher Report. You can also read her Civ Report newsletter and hear her on the Too Many Men podcast. She is Sarah Sivian. Sarah, thanks for doing this. How are you?
Oh, anytime. I'm great. How are you guys?
We're doing well. It's officially the off season for the NHL. You know, we've got a little bit of time to digest the Florida Panthers going back to back. And I do want to look ahead to the off season. But I mean, while it's still fresh in our minds here, what was your biggest takeaway from the Florida Panthers winning again and defeating the Edmonton Oilers again?
Oh, God, get a goalie. Like, it's just kind of what it's always been, right? There's that, but also I don't even know if that could defeat the Behemoth. I don't know how to pronounce that word, but that is the Florida Panthers. Like, I just think they're cocky, which is a good thing. They're dominant, and they got even better somehow. It's like, it's just a lesson for the rest of the league to kind of, you can always be tweaking your team a little bit as the years go on.
Well, I will also say, you know, there was this narrative throughout the playoffs about like, oh, these unlikable Panthers, they're the villain and all this. And look, I get it. You have Brad Marchand on your team and, you know, Sam Bennett, what he does to goalies. I understand that. But I've never been able to really quite get there with the Panthers as this like deeply unlikable bunch of jerks. Like, I see how they play and they step to the edge. But I don't know. The Oilers have Corey Perry and Evander Kane on their team. They go right to the edge sometimes, too. And I watched the celebrations and them passing it to Nate Schmidt first and all of that. And like, I don't know. They seem pretty likable. Like, I think that's part of what we're missing here sometimes with Florida is, yeah, they have this edge to them, but they also seems like a pretty good group of dudes ultimately, and certainly that they love playing for each other.
I think deep down people might just be bored of like
sure.
three straight appearances in the Stanley Cup final. And I think like it's okay if it's boring hockey, which it isn't, first of all. I'm there with you right now, and I just feel like these guys like each other, and I like to watch that. You know
yes.
what I mean? Like, they're constantly hanging out. They're hanging out on the road, hanging out at home, whatever it is. Like, I think people might be a little jealous that their teams aren't quite there yet.
With the Florida Panthers making it to three straight Stanley Cup finals on the heels of the Tampa Bay Lightning making it to three straight Stanley Cup finals, and only two teams from the East have even had an opportunity to contest the cup final across the last 6 years. We've only had, what, four teams do so in the West. One of them, or I guess five, but one of them's Montreal, so that doesn't really count, Sarah. Are we in an era where parity needs to be viewed as like a dead sort of driving force in the NHL?
Oh, well, I just saw reports that the league is considering expanding the playoffs, so clearly they don't think so. But I'm kind of sick of these conversations when it comes to parity, when it comes to taxes, when it comes to whatever. Like, you look at what Bill Zito has been able to do with the team, and I think that speaks louder than anything. But the way he got Seth Jones, he got Brad Marchand at a low cost when he was injured and coming off like a tough season for the Bruins overall. Like, I think it's more about people need to look inwards at their own GMs and what
yeah.
they're doing and rise above.
See, I like not having parity. I think having Connor McDavid playing a legacy-defining Game 6 yeah. in Florida against the back-to-back Stanley Cup champions, I think teams of historic importance playing at the toughest time of year, mm-hmm. I think the fact that it's like Reinhardt and Forsling and like the best players making a difference every night is good. Like, I think this is good. It's like a very NBA version of the NHL in a way that appeals to me a lot. But I do think that it has, like, I don't know what you do if you're a mid-range team right now, because mm-hmm. I look at the Panthers roster and I just think, how are you ever getting there?
Yeah. I mean, with the salary cap rising, I do feel that's more NBA-esque. Like, we talk about the NBA, of course they have such a, like, a loose salary cap suggestion where it's like they can afford to kind of, LeBron can pick his pick of the litter, and you're not going to get that with Connor McDavid because I know his contract's up next year, but because of the hard salary cap. But he to a degree has that power more than any other player in the NHL, and he was extremely frustrated, of course, after Game 6, and he's saying we just keep doing the same bleeping thing over and over again. He wants his team to improve around him. That doesn't necessarily mean he's leaving. But I liked, I don't know, if we're talking about the NBA too, you saw a little bit of time management at the end of like the past 2 months of the regular season where you had Panthers players in and out. And I felt that ended up really invigorating them on their second back-to-back cup run.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, you bring up Connor McDavid and his contractual situation going forward. And that was in the spotlight today because the Oilers had their year-end media availabilities. And, of course, you know, with McDavid eligible to sign an extension in less than 2 weeks here, he was asked about it. And the phrase that people are really keying in on, and whether it's, you know, paranoid Edmonton fans, whether it's maybe slightly delusional Toronto fans who think McDavid's coming back to Ontario. But it was with that being said, right, he goes on about, yeah, I love to stay here, love being an Oiler, want to win here, unfinished business. With that being said, I have to do what's right for my family. I kind of look at this and say, like, guys, he's signing. Dreisaitl stayed there as long as, like, where is he going to get to play? Where is he going to get to play with a better player than Leon Dreisaitl? So I'm selling on the idea that, with that being said, is like a sign of impending doom for Connor McDavid's relationship with the Oilers. What do you say, Sarah?
No, I'm there with you right now. Like, I go back and forth with, well, maybe he'll do it. Like, doing something out of spite for him would be short-sighted, where it's like, it's so true. Dreisaitl, like, really stepped up these playoffs, and they just, you look at what they need. They're there with the Panthers. If they have a better goalie, they have maybe a few more key players. Hyman isn't hurt. Like, I just think it'd be a little short-sighted, especially, I don't know, I think your family life does matter. I know Lauren's building kind of life there. She just opened a restaurant, which, okay, it matters, it doesn't. He has enough money to be able to have a house there. You know what I mean? But I think when you objectively sit there and think about it, which team that can afford him is going to have a player like Dreisaitl to play next to? Like, I don't think he's going to go elsewhere. I think he might entertain it and leverage as much as he possibly can, but not leverage in the way we typically think when it comes down to more money. I think it might come down to, get a better team around me.
Yeah.
God, get another goalie that can help in this situation. It doesn't mean Skinner has to leave, but, like, please act like that's a problem.
Yeah, I think that's it more than anything else. It's just like, I want to stay, but don't take it for granted. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean I'm just going to roll over and accept whatever you guys are putting out there. Like, I want to be here, but you got to step up and do your part as well. And I mean, I don't know, like, what to make about the Trent Frederick extension that's being rumored out there right now of 8 years. Look, maybe if there's some deals like that, it changes Connor
McDavid's. More than rumored.
Yeah, you're right. Reported. Oh. Heavily and accurately reported by multiple sources. But I just,
what are they doing there?
That guy,
I don't know.
That was my last straw. Like, if I'm an Oilers fan, that's my final straw. That's the last thing I want to see. It's not that Frederick is some evil, bad player or something. I don't care. You're missing the point. I don't care about this when I wake up after Sam Reinhart scores 4 goals on us and we lose game 6. We didn't even get to game 7 this time. Like, I do not want to hear about Trent Frederick's attack right now. So that was like, God, can we read the room for a second? But I guess we can't.
Well, the way to the NHL players think, Frederick at 4, Holloway at 2.3, you know, like, it's that simple. It's that simple for guys.
Yeah.
And by the way, like, it should be. That should keep you up at night if you're an Oilers fan. And who's a bigger Oilers fan? Who wants the success? Who wants the Oilers to succeed more than 97?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, I do feel, I mean, you get Holloway on an offer sheet, so I hope we see more offer sheets this summer, because obviously that worked out, obviously, without the injury, great for the Blues, and I can't wait to see him healthy and come back. But seriously, you're looking at that as an Oilers fan, you're like, we are reinventing the wheel. All you need is, it's a tough pill to swallow for sure, especially like hours after the cup was lost.
I'm throwing the gauntlet down. I'm buying the McDavid watch should be a story that we should be talking about and tracking closely. And I think the fact that he lost back-to-back years to a guy who he beat in Alberta, who then chose their spot and is now a back-to-back cup champion, I think there's something there. I think there's something there. How could there not be? How could you not be so frustrated with this Oilers organization?
Oh, 1,000%. And also that plays into what the Panthers are so good at, which is what it only fueled their win, because, you know, like, you think, oh, are they getting fatigued? Do they have a cup hangover, or are they like satisfied with their one cup? It's like, no, let's beat McDavid again.
Can we talk, by the way, about Matthew Tkachuk always recruiting everybody all the time? Like, it was him who kind of started this McDavid storyline that's immediately blown up within 48 hours. He's got like three cigars in his mouth on a beach in Hollywood, Florida somewhere. And the whole, and everyone's freaking out about McDavid's answer in part because of his very simple, wherever it is.
It's hilarious. Like, he might have a torn hernia and several other things going on with the hip of doctors, but he'll never have a torn heart when it comes to talking trash and to getting in people's heads. And that's exactly what, like, the rattiness of it all. Like, the Panthers, Bill Zito, Paul Maurice, everybody just absolutely bought into this. And it's hilarious. Him and his cigar with Pink Pony Club. Like, he was waiting for this, and he knew. I heard that this was the worst cup final people have heard on the ice with the trash talking, and it totally checks out. Like, these guys have gotten to know each other. They know what will get under each other's skin. No one's better than that than Matthew Tkachuk, and he was able to make it. It's like, it's so true. He's able to make a difference even when he physically can't.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable what he's able to do, especially when you hear, like, the adductor being torn off the bone and everything, and, like, the fact that he was still out there and gutting it out is pretty remarkable stuff from Matthew Tkachuk. All right, so we're kind of transitioning now to off-season mode. We're starting to see players come off the board, right? Matt Duchene, Ryan Donato, and we'll see who's even left there on July 1st. But just kind of big picture, you know, whether it's a team you're interested in, where a player lands, whatever it is, what's your kind of big number one question you're curious about going into this NHL offseason?
I mean, it's Mitch Marner, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Like, I hate to be basic, but it just feels like such an interesting situation where no one's going to be happy, right? They're going to sign him to a monster contract and people are going to complain, but, or he's going to go away. Maybe people will be happy that he leaves, but then they're going to see how much he actually meant to this team. Like, people downplay how good he is so much, and they kind of let Austin Matthews off the hook, in my opinion. Like, you look at even their last playoff run, like, Matthews scores double the goals of Marner, but he disappears in the playoffs. I know he's probably dealing with some type of injury where it's, like, been so vague, and it only adds to the mystification of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But Marner didn't, until the last few games, didn't have a terrible postseason compared to, like, what he does, and that's making a lot of assists, making stuff happen, and he was able to do that. I would like to see him somewhere else. I feel like it'd be a fresh start where he can maybe be better than ever.
Yeah, it's very interesting following the conversation from Toronto around Mitch Marner, because there's simultaneous, like, people are really excited for him to leave, but also angry at him for wanting to leave. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where they're trying to have it both ways. It's like, oh, you bum, you could never get it done, good riddance, and also, how dare you desert the team that drafted you?
100%. And he grew up, like, it's not like he's trying to not do it. There's just so much around this team at this point. And I think Matthews is somebody who actually needs to step up more, but I guess they know he's not going anywhere. So Marner becomes a scapegoat. Not Getty disappears in the last few games, whatever it is, but he's not like a top five reason these Leafs haven't been able to get it done. So I think Leafs fans, if he leaves, they're going to be able to recognize that and feel a little bad about the way they acted around him.
What does it look like when we get a full season of Austin Matthews away from one of the great playmaking wingers of his generation?
I mean, I think there's been so much pressure on this core that I'm sure they're all buddies, of course, right? And they've gotten close, but at the same time, I think it might be like a Good Will Hunting situation where they're like, yeah, you go to California, you go to maybe Vegas, you go to Utah, and you have a better life, and I will do my best to have a better life over here. Like, it'll be it's a toxic relationship with the core four at this point, and I feel like Matthews might actually flourish. I think the biggest concern with him is whatever sent him to Germany earlier in the season. You saw it even at the Four Nations on the game-breaking play. I don't know. I think something's a little bit up with him after, like, a insane terror of scoring goals. Like, it doesn't make sense that he dropped off so much and just has not been able to perform. So I think maybe without Marner, it actually will be a situation where he feels maybe motivated again to prove himself. I don't know what the problem is, but I think the separation might actually help.
Has a fan base ever been as down bad as the Maple Leafs are with Mitch Marner in your lifetime? Can you even think of an analogous situation? Because I don't think I can.
It's just the thing that gets me is no matter what he does, they aren't happy. Like that one video we all saw of him screaming, they're like, meanwhile, he isn't even sweating. Like, I think he's probably breaking a sweat. Just like they were all so mad that he cared. They're mad that he doesn't care. And they're losing the plot entirely when it comes to he had a great first few rounds. Like, I mean, I guess the first round was great for him. The second, he slowed down. But it's just like everybody else did too, and they just are kind of looking at where all their money's tied up, I think. And I understand that, you know what, as if I'm a Leafs fan, I'm like, okay, I kind of want to clear up that space maybe and see what else is out there. But then I can see that for myself thinking, oh, that's exactly what was out there or slightly worse. Like, I don't think you're getting better than Marner in this situation, but no. I think this is such a unique, intangible situation where everybody is so cooked. Like, something has to change. I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, I just don't see a road forward for the partnership at this point, yeah. Right? Like, there's been so much emotion. As you said, the dry hair, the last, the straw that broke the camel's back for Leafs fans with Mitch Marner. Sarah, awesome to have you on the show. Thank you for doing this, and we'll chat again soon.
Anytime. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, our pleasure. That is Sarah Sivian, and you can read her at Bleacher Report, also on the Civ Report newsletter, and listen to her on the Too Many Men podcast covering the NHL, joining us here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. So you're buying the McDavid angle.
Oh, absolutely.
So maybe I'm...
Absolutely.
Hold on.
Maybe it's wishful thinking. Maybe it's wishful thinking, Jamie, but I'll tell you, like, a lot of teams think they might have a shot in the next 18 months. There's definitely people around the game that are watching this closely. So if that's the case, I will be too.
So I can understand the frustration angle with Edmonton, obviously. How could you not, right? But I think where I have a hard time really buying into it is it doesn't feel like the work they have to do is, it doesn't feel like the bar is that high for them to jump over, right? Like, I think if you get a credible upgrade and goal sometime before like July 15th and you take care of the Evan Bouchard deal, which he also gave a big vote of in support of today at his availability, then I think you're in with a very, very good chance to get something done, especially because Leon Draisaitl is already signed long term there. And I wonder if part of my skepticism is also reacting to like what I regard as just the complete delusional thinking of Maple Leafs fans on this subject, right? Where like they're convinced that McDavid is plotting how he can get to Toronto at the earliest opportunity. And like, I think if he is going to leave, I would be surprised if it's for Toronto and probably more for like a perennial contender organization that he thinks he can put over the top. But I also just think like you've got Draisaitl there. You've been a lifelong Oiler. You've been close. It's not like we're talking about like, you know, multiple first round exits and embarrassments here, right? Like they're going to the Stanley Cup final. I get the frustration. I just think for the stars to align, for there to be a better option for him is going to be pretty difficult.
Yeah. And look, I think the fundamental reason why he does stay, if he does stay, is going to be, where do you ever find a colleague or a coworker that mm-hmm. like you enjoy working with, or that, you know, like, as much as you do with Leon Draisaitl, yep. right? Like, they make magic together, and I'm sure he'll weight that really heavily.
Well, and think of, like, the trust that's been built up between them, right? Because it's like, it's not just that he's a phenomenal player. They're both total gamers in the playoffs, right? Like, they both produce, they fight through things. Like, there's a level of trust there, and like, okay, I know I can go to war with this guy as my sidekick, and even calling him a sidekick is almost dismissive because he's so good. But
it
like,
for sure, it is.
You know what I mean? But like, he is, just because the other guy's McDavid. But like, where are you going to find someone that you trust to go into a playoff battle with as much as you trust Leon Draisaitl?
Yeah, or that has as much authority in terms of pushing you, right?
Right.
Like, you know, that, and that's like, you know, there's an element of creativity to it. It's like you enjoy playing hockey with the people who you have chemistry with, right? Like you know, it's like having a great radio co-host or a really good coworker or you know, you're in a band.
Something I hope to experience someday. We're all looking for that.
Yeah. And I hope you get that too, buddy. but the, you know, it's fun, right? Like, it's fun to have that mind meld with somebody, that rift, not the rift, like, like the rift, like in Pacific Rim, not the rift, like sure. the Vancouver Canucks experience this year. Before we go.
Yes.
Toronto Maple Leafs fans and their handling of, reaction to, and treatment of Mitch Marner is one of the most embarrassing things we've ever seen from a hockey fan base. They should all be ashamed. And I will never hear that that fan base isn't the single worst in hockey, given what we've seen unfold there. I think it's beyond perplexing. It's like gross and ugly. It's hockey fandom at its absolute worst. And that level of toxicity should make everyone who's engaged in it fully ashamed. Everyone in that market should give their head a shake. And when Mitch Marner goes and immediately has success on a better team, including in the playoffs, we'll remember him as this generation's Larry Murphy, and also remind ourselves that Toronto does this to a star-level player every 25 years or so, and that at some point it should be called out more like explicitly by national media that fan base is the single most negative force in the sport.
My personal favorite talking point. No. Because, and this is something that doesn't that doesn't just come up with Mitch Marner, but it has come up, is like the, we drafted him. It's like he had 126 points in 63 games in his draft year in the OHL. You were not
congratulations. You didn't pass on him for Noah Hanifin. Yeah. Like, what do you want?
You weren't rolling the dice here, guys. This was like guess what? Somebody was going to draft him. It wasn't like an act of generosity or charity that you drafted Mitch Marner coming off a season where he was literally a 2 point a game player in the OHL in his draft season. It's like, we drafted him and this is how he repays us. Like, you mean you got to like control his worth and where he got to play for what? Like 9 years? That's what he's supposed to be grateful to you for? Come on.
Mitch Marner going off elsewhere and Austin Matthews significantly missing the playmaker on his wing, the elite playmaker on his wing, like absolute lock it in. That's going to be something we talk about for years after this. And all of the people who've like destroyed Marner are going to have been hilariously wrong in time. It's really going to be enjoyable for me to watch.
It's the best possible scenario for Leafs haters out here in Vancouver and British Columbia. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at rogers.com. We'll look ahead to the offseason more. Can get into Drantz's latest notebook up at The Athletic. A Marco Rossi update out there as well as it relates to the Vancouver Canucks. So lots more on the other side. Keep sending your text in. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintex studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. And I just wanted to pass this along from your colleague at The Athletic, Drantzer, who was a guest on our show not too long ago, Michael Russo, doing a Minnesota Wild trade tiers piece. And I should mention, this is Russo and his colleague Joe Smith. And who would have thought an Athletic writer doing a trade tiers piece for the NHL team that they cover?
Hey, how dare you? We know where our bread is buttered, baby.
Listen, it works. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
All right?
Like, oh, I'm sorry. You know what? You know who you should blame? You should blame all the readers who immediately see tears and are like, I love tears.
Their eyes light up. That's what it's all about. Tears, countdowns, rankings. Look, this is the lifeblood of the sports media industry. It's all of that stuff. Anyways, to lead it off, and I don't think he even like named the tier. It was just, let's talk about Marco Rossi to lead off the trade tiers piece on the Minnesota Wild, and discusses like, look, they don't want to get worse. They don't want futures. They would be open to getting like first round pick that they can flip plus a player that helps them right now. He also says, so I'll read this, this paragraph for context here. The problem is, as far as we know, Guerin, that's of course Bill Guerin, has so far been offered mostly futures for Rossi. While Guerin would likely take a player and a first rounder and perhaps flip the first rounder elsewhere, he definitely doesn't want just a first rounder. Then he says, that's the offer, brackets, the number 15 pick, that the Vancouver Canucks likely made for Rossi. Now, it doesn't say they did make an offer or did they did make that offer specifically, or even that they definitely made an offer for Marco Rossi. But again, and when we talked to Michael Russo not that long ago, he said he's heard from very good sources that the Canucks are interested, would like to acquire Marco Rossi. And now, without making it quite explicit, seeming to suggest that there's been talk centered around the 15th pick, maybe even as far as an offer, including the 15th pick. And the question remains for me with the Marco Rossi acquisition cost is, what does that other piece need to look like from Minnesota's perspective? We were just having the conversation before we had Sarah Sivian on, okay, about Victor Mancini, Sawyer Mineo. Are those the guys you're throwing in to get a deal done alongside the 15th overall pick? I don't know if that's moving the needle for Minnesota, right? Like, if you're talking about we need guys that can help us right now, maybe if you're really high on Mancini, you see him helping your blue line next year, but neither of those guys profile as immediate impact players at the NHL level. And you start to look at the Canucks roster and, okay, who could possibly fit into that mold? You know, like a Connor Garland, but while they're trading Marco Rossi because of size concerns, how much are they going to be interested in that? And I do start to wonder about, like a Dakota Joshua, for example, and now not coming off his strongest season, obviously, although very understandable circumstances around that. And I'm not saying like 15th plus Dakota Joshua would be enough to get a deal done for Marco Rossi. But I do wonder if, given the emphasis on one, a certain type of players from Minnesota, which is why Rossi is available in the first place, and two, the insistence that, hey, yeah, mid-round first pick, that can be part of it, but we need the players right now we can put in our lineup. I wonder if we have to kind of broaden our imaginations a little bit here about what a package could look like if the Canucks wanted to go get it done.
Yeah, I mean, I've long thought Bluger, right?
Yep.
Bill Guerin would be super familiar with Bluger. It was the general manager down in Wilkes-Barre when Bluger was on his way up, longtime Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, front office apparatchik. So, you know, I could see there being like some level of synergy there, would save the Canucks a couple million if they're bringing back a center. So, you know, that I've long, like, in my mind, in terms of like what you put together an offer on, depending on exactly what the market looks like, you know, Bluger plus Mancini plus 15 OA.
Okay. Yeah. If that at least, like, I guess it's just like how, when you say you want a player right now, like what kind of player are we talking about? You know what I mean? That's my question. Cause you're not getting like a top six center back, right? The league as a whole doesn't seem to really be bullish on Marco Rossi as a top six center. So you're going to have to set your sights lower than that. And I guess the question for me is just how much lower do they set their sights?
Yeah. And even if they do set their sights lower, can the Canucks get in on the bidding?
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's not going to be straightforward by any means, right? It's going to be a very complicated dance to try and put it together. And look, if you have to add a second, who cares, right? Like, this is the other part of the Mancini conversation that I didn't touch on in the article, but I think is worth considering. Like, Doug Weight trade, the Elias Lindholm trade, like, these Jim Rutherford trades where he's acquiring or taking a big swing, like, the amount of extraneous pieces that are often included in his trades is
the Yoni Yermo.
Yoni Yermo, an incredible bit.
Yeah.
Like a truly incredible bit. And
Jim Rutherford's like the real life, like NHL gameplay guy or player, right? Like 100%. NHL GM, the video game series where it's just like, what if I just keep adding fifth round picks? Eventually that value will creep up.
When he traded the 15th overall pick for Kapanen, here was the deal. And now, granted, I also want to note, this was during the pandemic. This is the most absolutely hilarious, like, Kyle Dubas and Jim Rutherford were both, like, in you know, some state of lockdown and just had way too much time on their hands trade of all time. But it's like, So the 15th overall pick dealt along with the rights to pending restricted free agent forward Evan Rodriguez, forward Philip Helander, and defenseman David Warsawski for forward Kasperi Kapanen, forward Pontus Aberg, and defenseman Jesper Lindgren. It's like, that's the ultimate this trade could have been an email gentleman deal of all time.
Just throw in some more guys in there.
Yeah.
Evan Rodriguez.
It's honestly remarkable. Who?
Evan Rodriguez.
Yeah, yeah, but he was...
I know.
He had, like, a brutal qualifying offer, right? Yeah. So it's like he wasn't... It wasn't... It's like the Brock Faber and a first for Fiala deal.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, but it wasn't 100% of Brock Faber.
He wasn't, real Brock Faber as we think of him now when he was included in that deal.
Or it's like Dougie Hamilton and Adam Fox for Elias Lindholm, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah... It wasn't 100% of Adam Fox. In fact, it was 0% of Adam Fox.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it was the rights to Adam Fox and the rights to ultimately make that trade with New York later on. You know what I mean? Like, that was sort of where that was. So, you know, that's stuff to bear in mind. So that's why the Mancini thing stands out to me, too, right? It's like we've seen this team draft Hunter Brustevich and flip him, right? We've seen this team short sell.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a chance, depending on... You know, there's a chance, depending on what Minnesota's American League responsible assistant general managers have thought of Mancini's run in the Calder Cup playoffs, that his value would have spiked somewhat, frankly, as a result of what he's done in this Calder Cup final. Certainly, that's what you hope if you're the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, that was part of the Hunter Brustevich thing, right? Is he was a third-round pick who was having a fantastic season in the OHL after being a third-round pick, right? So his value had gone up significantly, and I don't know if it's quite at that level for Victor Mancini, but it certainly wouldn't be out of character if, you know, you take a guy who was... They were happy to get him in the JT Miller deal, but he was also clearly the third asset of that. He wasn't the cornerstone piece of that. And if all of a sudden he's gone from, you know, third asset in a significant trade to second asset in a significant trade, like, that's a big deal. And that wouldn't surprise me at all if that was something they were willing to potentially cash in on. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The other question I have now kind of kicking around in my head, and especially after we talked about the potential pivot, will they be able to do all the work they want to do going into the free agency and ahead of free agency, is, and somebody texted this in, I've lost the texter, I believe it was texter Big Lunch, who asked, is there a chance
I'm a big fan of Big Lunch, say, man.
What a nickname.
That sounds great.
What a nickname. That's mostly why I wanted to include it. Shout out to Big Lunch. Is there a chance that they are actually picking 15th next week in LA at the draft, right? Like, that could be a potential knock-on effect of, hey, the guys just aren't there. The prices are way too high. We're not involved in this. And, you know, you and I have kind of always been kicking the real hardcore draft coverage down the road here, right? Because it's like, well, they're probably going to trade
We're going to keep doing it.
But, we're running out of runway to kick it down the road. You know what I mean? So I'm wondering, do I have to start doing Braden Coutts deep dives?
These always happen if they happen on the draft floor.
Sure.
And we can just, like, pretend we know what we're talking about after the trade goes down.
Not that we would ever do such a thing.
Absolutely we would do such a thing. What are you talking about?
Okay,
that's exactly like us.
Let's say over the last week, so a week ago, what percent chance would you have put at the Canucks making their first pick, their first round pick, 15th overall, and where is it now? Has it changed for you over the last week?
No, in fact, if anything,
really?
I'd say it's gone down.
Really?
Yeah, of course. Like, you know, I think they just had a pretty desirable out in terms of landing a top six forward without acquisition cost removed from the table.
In Duchesne. Yeah.
So, to some extent, I think the level of enthusiasm, I don't want to use a word like desperation, so the urgency, the urgency of swinging a deal, in my mind, has gone up as a result of that, which means keeping 15th overall almost seems like a less realistic possibility. And then we'll see how the draft unfolds. I mean, you know, there's guys like, if Roger McQueen falls, right? He's a player that a lot of people in the industry think the Canucks have done their homework on, but so is everyone else. Like, everyone wants the 6'5" goal scoring ace.
Yeah. And also, I think that ship has sailed. I don't think this is.
I think so too.
He's not fallen. Yeah.
But if he did, all of a sudden the purchasing power of 15OA looks a lot different.
Sure.
right, than it might otherwise. So, you know, we'll see how this goes, right? I still would be pretty surprised given this team's like existential short-term priority if they end up picking 15th overall. I don't want to use a word like shock, but I would certainly be surprised by that.
Yeah. It's just, if it's not Rossi, you know what I mean? Like, we're starting to run out of targets that really make sense to use it on at this point. Mm. That's the question for me. And I still think there's a good chance that something works out with Marco Rossi. And actually, I should mention here, Patrick Johnston at Post Media just released an article adding on to and confirming the Michael Russo report, or kind of report, from The Athletic that I just read, and what PJ has to say in The Province. And you can go read is, as first reported by The Athletic's Mike Russo, Post Media has confirmed the Canucks have tried to pry the young center away from the Wild in a trade, offering up their 15th overall draft pick in next week's NHL entry draft, plus a player. Whether the player is on the NHL roster or a prospect isn't currently known. Russo's reporting suggests that Wild GM Bill Guerin is after an NHL roster player rather than a prospect. So PJ saying they've put the 15th overall on the table, plus an extra asset as a player, whether that's a prospect or a roster player, not currently known. And obviously that was not satisfactory for Minnesota.
Yet.
That's exactly. And I think my you know, building suspicion that Marco Rossi is going to be a Canuck is not necessarily based on the idea that, like, the Canucks love Marco Rossi, they're head over heels about him. It's more based on an idea that the market around the rest of the league is not going to heat up like Minnesota wants. That's where I'm coming from here, and that the Canucks, and this was something you included in the notebook, is they're aware of the idea that, like, they're going to have to bet on imperfect players. Because guess what? Every player is imperfect. So there's a willingness on their end to look past the warts in Marco Rossi's profile and make that bet. And I'm not sure how many other teams around the league have that same willingness right now. And that's kind of where I'm coming from, that eventually it feels like, hey guys, we're offering a 15th overall pick. We're willing to offer players as well. Like, I don't know if Minnesota's going to beat that offer. And for all the talk of, like, well, we're in no rush to trade him, it's like, come on, you're going to trade him. And if it gets to the draft next week, I think there's a good chance that deal gets done.
Yeah. The other part of this to look at is, like, Minnesota's leverage is different than it usually would be, right? Because everyone has so much cap space, because everyone's so aggressive in looking to improve their teams here, mm-hmm. right? There's an element to which, you know, you used to be able to sit on an RFA and just grind him into the summer, you know? And if there's a material disagreement, talks have gone cold, there's actually some bad blood, the player doesn't want to be there, like, that's a player who's going to be willing to sign an offer sheet. You know, the old offer sheet comments that we get where people are like, how do you know they were even willing to do it? It's like, no, you're right. They hate money. My bad. They love not getting a fair deal from their employer, because that's how human beings are.
Especially in Marco Rossi's case, where it's like, I don't trust this team.
They don't have my
best interest in heart. Yeah.
Like with him, you can't even suggest that he wouldn't consider it. Like, he will consider it very strongly. So this isn't one where Minnesota can necessarily sit around and wait. And there's a lot of situations like that around the league, right? I mean, there are all sorts of situations where the Wild would be, you know, I think in a pretty tough spot. Like, think about a team like Winnipeg,
mm-hmm.
right? Where it's like, you've got Lowry, you've got Scheifele. You know what I mean? They didn't really have a great second line center. They're in your division. Rossi could be an upgrade on Namestnikov. They have $25 million in cap space. If they take Rossi, you're not getting an early first-round pick from them, right? A $7 million offer, like, on the button, that's a first and a third compensation. That's bad compensation for Marco Rossi. Like, let's be real. That's not good enough if you're, you know, the Minnesota Wild. So it's like, from Winnipeg's perspective, it's like, okay, we take a shot at addressing our biggest need. We have the size down the middle to insulate this undersized guy. You know, even if they match it, they've signed a contract they don't like.
Yep.
Which is great for us.
Yep.
And we're pretty confident they're not getting a top 10 pick out of this.
Yep.
Like, then you're checkmated.
Yep. Then you're in a real,
what about Boston?
You're in a real pickle then. Yeah.
What about Boston? Maybe Boston gives you a top 10 pick, but probably not, right? Like, they still have McAvoy. They still have Swayman. Like, mm-hmm. that's a mid-round, you know, that's not better than 15. It's not better than calling your own shot and having the flexibility and not having a week of the offseason in which your salary cap space in the Wild only have $15 million of it, by the way, is tied up and can't be utilized to pounce on XYZ opportunity, right? Like, it's not necessarily Chicago that's going to be coming for him, right? It's not necessarily a team where you're, like, really excited to bet against them. Detroit. What about Detroit? Detroit needs center help.
Yep.
They have Marco Casper coming. They have a ton of size down the middle. Kopp, right? Like, they have lots of guys who can insulate Rossi. Like, that's the thing. So it's like, do you know, the fact that there's no deal that's happened yet, to me, isn't a sign that, like Minnesota's leverage isn't going up between now and the draft.
Mm-hmm.
It is basically, and by the way, I think that's true across the board. Matthew Nyes, Will Cooley, all these guys. Like, I think the J.J. Paterka. I think the RFA dynamic is so fascinating because it's flipped this year.
Yeah, and I think especially with Minnesota, it's just there's no, like, they can bluster all they want, but I just don't see a path forward for them bringing him back, right? So it's, and to all of the points you made about their vulnerability to an RFA, and the other factor is if you're going to have to accept a package at least partly built around futures, you want to get that deal done before the draft. Right? Like, then you have the flexibility to go try and flip it, to go try and shop it. You know what you're working with. Like, you still have the flexibility at that point to pursue other things for your offseason, to try to improve your team. If you're letting it drag on past the draft into free agency, hoping he doesn't get an offer sheet, we'll work out a deal down there, like, or down the road, you're also just cutting off your own ability to proactively improve your team, to be aggressive in other ways. So there's a ton of reasons why they should want to get the deal done before the draft. I don't read too much into them turning the Canucks down at this point, right? Like, that's how negotiations work. You offer, you counter offer, you get close to what's a soft deadline, but a pretty significant soft deadline in the draft next week. And the fact that the Canucks are already making those offers, and given what the rest of the market looks like, given Jim Rutherford's penchant for getting his guy, right? If he sees a deal that he thinks makes sense, as we just talked about, he's willing to throw in extra pieces. He's willing to do what it takes to go get a deal done. I know we've spent an awful lot of time talking Marco Rossi over the last, 6 weeks here on the station, on the show, but I think there's very good reason that we've been doing so, and I think we're going to spend a lot more time talking about him for the next week or so here, too.
Yeah, we should. We should. And like, you know, I mean, I think the least Adam Foote player imaginable that if I could design in a lab a player that I feel like Adam Foote would not like.
Marco Rossi?
It's Trevor Zegras.
Oh, okay.
No, it's Trevor Zegras.
Sure.
And I'm not convinced that that's not something the Canucks will poke their heads in on.
It should be.
Like,
it should be.
It absolutely should be. The fact that he's the most distressed of the assets ups the level to which they should be enthusiastic about it.
Well, because here's the thing. How many players are going to be out there where it's the team proactively wants to trade the player? Not many, right? Like, a lot of the situations we're talking about, and Marco Rossi, yeah, they want to trade him, but because they bumped his minutes down and it's the contract situation and all that. But like J.J. Paterka, they don't want to trade J.J. Paterka. You know what I mean? Like, even Jason Robertson, like, we've heard his name kind of out there, but I'm sure they'd love to figure out a way to get an extension done. Zegras and Rossi are kind of the only two where it's like the team saying, we're out on this player. We want to move him. We want to go in a different direction. And that just changes the dynamic so much versus, well, you know, he maybe wants to figure something out, but we still really like the player. So you're going to have to knock our socks off to get a deal done. That's not the case with either of those guys, and that's exactly the market that the Canucks should be playing in. And by the way, I think you can get both done. I think you can do Marco Rossi and Trevor Zegras with the assets the Canucks have and without it even being that much of a sticker shock thing when all is said and done.
Yeah, I don't disagree. You know, that to me is a fascinating one. Plus, there's familiarity with, you know, the Canucks' as captain. And if you're going to trust someone... Now, that said, like, all of these moves, like, you wake up on July 2nd, and you've paid an awful lot for Marco Rossi, and you're like, we have Pettersson and Rossi and Hedl down the middle. Like, oh my God, I don't know that that's hard enough. You know, or like, yeah, we're going into the season with Zegras and Pettersson in our top six, and maybe Garland, and maybe Hoglander, and it's like, oof.
And, you know, like, and maybe Marco Rossi.
Do we have enough dog? Well, at least Marco Rossi's a dog, you
sure.
know? Like, at least, but yeah, I mean... so be it. You know, it's going to be like that anyway.
That's the thing.
It's going to be like that anyway. Like, this is, and by the way, that's okay. This was a team that probably underperformed by like 5 to 10 points on internal dysfunction and injuries alone. Right? The issue is, how quickly do you think Utah and Anaheim and some of those other non-playoff teams catch up? Right? Like, that's the issue, is staying ahead of those teams, because on form, like, even without too many changes, you can still absolutely see this Canucks team as a playoff side, I think.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. That's just not the bar. But there's absolutely a clear path to making the playoffs again. It's just a question of how many further steps can they take above and beyond that. That does it for us today. As a reminder, Game 4 of the Calder Cup Finals in Abbotsford at the Abbotsford Center tonight. The Abbey Canucks looking to take a dominant 3-1 lead in the Calder Cup Finals. Pre-game coverage with Dan and Sat live at the arena. The call will be, of course, with Brandon Astle and Landon Ferraro in the building. And then post-game, an hour of post-game coverage from Dan and Sat afterwards as well. So make sure you tune into that, and we'll be back tomorrow for more Canucks talk on Sportsnet 650.